wanted the United Nations to become a world government with power to control the armed forces of all nations, including the United States. To a remarkable degree, even the U.S. military thought that the atomic bomb should be outlawed or placed under some form of international mandate. General Arnold was a contributor to One World or None. He'd been a leading proponent of strategic air power and supervised the American bombing of both Germany and Japan. The stress had taken its toll. Arnold suffered 4 heart attacks during the war, and his essay in One World or None was a final public statement before retirement. The appeal of nuclear weapons, he wrote, was simply a matter of economics. They had lowered the cost of destruction. They had made it too cheap and easy. An air raid that used to require 500 bombers now needed only 1. Atomic bombs were terribly inexpensive compared to the price of rebuilding cities. The only conceivable defense against such weapons was a strategy of deterrence, a threat to use them promptly against an enemy in retaliation. A far better protection, Arnold concluded, lies in developing controls and safeguards that are strong enough to prevent their use on all sides. General Carl A. Spotts, who replaced Arnold as the Army Air Force's commander, was an outspoken supporter of world government. General George C. Kenney, the head of the recently created Strategic Air Command, spent most of his time working on the military staff of the United Nations. General Leslie Groves, the military director of the Manhattan Project, who was staunchly anti-communist and anti-Soviet, argued that the atomic bomb's very existence should make war unthinkable. He favored international control of nuclear weapons and tough punishments for nations that tried to make them. Without such a system, he saw only one alternative for the United States. If there are to be atomic bombs in the world, Groves argued, we must have the best, the biggest, and the most. At a cabinet meeting on September 21, 1945, members of the Truman administration had debated what to do with this powerful new weapon. The issue of international control was complicated by another question. Should the secrets of the atomic bomb be given to the Soviet Union? The Soviets were a wartime ally, lost more than 20 million people fighting the Nazis, and now possessed a military stronger than that of any other country except the United States. Canada and Great Britain had been invited to join the Manhattan Project, while the Soviets hadn't even been informed of its existence. In a memo to President Truman, Henry Stimson, the outgoing Secretary of War, worried that excluding the Soviets from the nuclear club would cause a secret armament race of a rather desperate character. He proposed a direct approach to the Soviet Union outside of any international forum that would share technical information about atomic energy as a first step toward outlawing the atomic bomb. Otherwise, the Soviets were likely to seek nuclear weapons on their own. Stimson thought that a U.S.-Soviet partnership could ensure a lasting peace. The only way you can make a man trustworthy, he told the president, is to trust him. Stimson's proposal was strongly opposed by Secretary of the Navy James Forrestal. We tried that once with Hitler, Forrestal said. There are no returns on appeasement. The meeting ended with the cabinet split on whether to share atomic secrets with the Soviet Union. A few weeks later, George F. Kennan, one of the State Department's Soviet experts, gave his opinion in a telegram from Moscow, where he was posted at the U.S. Embassy. There is nothing, I repeat, nothing, Kennan wrote, in the history of the Soviet regime which could justify us in assuming that the men who are now in power in Russia, or even those who have chances of assuming power within the foreseeable future, would hesitate for a moment to apply this atomic power against us if by doing so they thought that they might materially improve their own power position in the world. In the absence of formal guarantees or strict controls, it would be highly dangerous to give the Soviets any technical information about how to make an atomic bomb. President Truman reached the same conclusion, and the matter was soon dropped. The United States had good reason to distrust the Soviet Union. In 1939, the Soviet non-aggression pact with Germany was followed by the Nazi invasions of Poland, Belgium, and France. 2 years later, the Soviet neutrality pact with Japan was followed by the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor. During the war, the Soviet Union launched its own surprise attacks on Finland, the Baltic states, and Poland, and then executed tens of thousands of their citizens. After encouraging Japanese diplomats to believe it would mediate a peace agreement with the United States, the Soviet Union attacked and occupied Manchuria in the closing days of the war, causing the deaths of perhaps 300,000 Japanese soldiers and civilians. The ideology of the Soviet Union sought the overthrow of capitalist governments like that of the United States, and the Soviet leader, Joseph Stalin, was not only paranoid and megalomaniacal, but had already killed almost as many Russians as the Nazis had. The Soviets had reason to distrust the United States, too. It had intervened militarily in the Russian Civil War, using American troops to fight the Red Army until 1920. It had withheld diplomatic recognition of the Soviet Union until 1933. It had suffered vastly fewer casualties fighting the Nazis during the Second World War, and yet claimed an equal role in the administration of occupied Germany. The United States government had a long history of opposing almost every form of socialism and communism. Armed with nuclear weapons, it was now the greatest impediment to Soviet influence in Europe, Asia, and the Middle East. President Truman decided that a domestic policy on atomic energy had to be adopted before the issue of international control could be addressed. The War Department favored the May-Johnson bill, which would give the military a prominent role in atomic matters. The bill was also backed by J. Robert Oppenheimer, who'd become a celebrity since the end of the war, renowned as the father of the atomic bomb. But the legislation was vehemently opposed by most of the young scientists who'd worked on the Manhattan Project. For years, they had resented the strict, compartmentalized secrecy imposed by General Groves. Few of the Manhattan Project scientists had been allowed to know how the atomic bomb would be used. Many now regretted that both Hiroshima